Well, on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Regional Medical Director of Region 7, the Louisiana Department of Health, Dr. Martha White, joining us. Dr. White, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
We've got a variant of the flu. I think somebody said variant K or something. Mm-hmm. This is wicked. My wife has been sick for a month, close to a month. What makes this one so tough?
So it's an H3N2, which we've seen that strain for years, but it was what was so prevalent in Australia during their flu season. But from the time it was in Australia to the time it made it to us, it actually made a shift, and it went from J to K. So we have a kind of a newer strain that none of us have a good immunity to. It's a little different from what's in the vaccine. And it's a doozy. You know, some years the flu is just a milder strain, and this year it's a pretty severe one.
How serious a problem is it in Northwest Louisiana right now? What are the numbers looking like?
So the entire state is in a very high level of influenza. If you look at the map around the state, we're in the deepest purple, almost blue color. So we have a high level of flu. We have about, of people getting tested, we have about 31% of those being positive for influenza, which is pretty significant. And then we have almost 15% of our visits to urgent cares and ERs are for influenza-like illness. So we're seeing a lot of it.
So is it worth it for somebody that if they haven't gotten a flu shot yet this year to go ahead and get one?
It is. It's something, you know, of course, we're always recommending you talk to your physician and see the benefits, risks for you. But we know that influenza vaccine, while it frequently is, you know, everybody calls it out, it didn't stop me from getting the flu, but it does stop you from being hospitalized, and it does prevent you from significant illness. So, and it can also shorten the course of the flu that you have. So yes, I would say if you speak to your doc and y'all decide that you should go ahead and get the vaccine, you still have time. We still have a significant amount of time left in the flu season. We don't usually really see it peter out to like March.
Okay, so, of the state data that you were referring to, can you hone in on Caddo-Bossier, your region that you cover? Are our numbers higher than the state averages? What do we know about the local area?
So there actually is a respiratory dashboard that you can look at. Anyone can go to. You just go to the LDGM, type in respiratory, and it'll bring it up for you. But it really only hones into Region 7. And we are actually a little bit less than what we're seeing in other parts of the state. So, that's encouraging, but it just means that there's two reasons for that. A, we don't all go to the sick, you know, especially if we figure we know what we have, mm-hmm. and we don't always get tested. And then the other thing is, it was a holiday, so a lot of people didn't go to the docs in the last couple of weeks. So that data will change, will be re-updated on Friday, so you can get a better look at that. But it's a great website to go check. It has everything from COVID to RSV and flu on it.
Let me ask you something, and I don't know if you keep this data or if you know it. Of the people that do get tested, you're saying 31% are positive. Of those 31% that test positive, do we know how many of them had the flu shot and that it just wasn't effective for them?
So we don't have that correlation exactly, but what we do know is that we're seeing, instead of like a 60 to 70% protection from the flu by the shot where you don't get sick. You know, you get the shot and you don't get sick.
Right.
We're seeing about 30 to 40% coverage because of that. They think it's because of that shift that happened from the time it was in Southern Hemisphere.
Give us some early warning signs that I have the flu. What should I be looking out for?
So I always tell people the flu doesn't come on slowly. It tends to come on pretty quickly. You feel okay, and then all of a sudden you just feel bad. And this flu this year, we're seeing really severe headaches, pretty severe muscle aches, and those muscle aches can last for days. Of course, the congestion, upper respiratory junk, and then a pretty significant cough that can also last for a fair amount of time. It comes on quickly. You feel like you've kind of been knocked down by a bus, and then it lasts for about a week to 10 days, 2 weeks. But the cough and the muscle aches, some of those other side effects can last even longer.
Most vulnerable, I can't say that word. You know what I mean.
Vulnerable population.
That, yes.
Yeah, we always say it's the people with other comorbidities, you know, the asthma, the heart disease, the obesity, diabetes, and then also the extremes of age, so younger population and the elderly.
And at what point I know I'm monopolizing this, sorry, Mike, at what point do you go to the doctor? A lot of us like to self-medicate, as you said earlier, but at what point is it time to go to the doctor?
Does there come a time where it's just too late? It has to play itself out.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so we know that if you take the antivirals for the flu, like Tamiflu is one everybody has heard of, Relenza is one of them. If you can take those in the first 24 to 72 hours, so if it's much more effective, and it really will shorten the course and severity of your flu. So if you get that, you know, I've just been knocked down hard, and you can go to urgent care or to your primary care doc, in that window, it's always better. If you're, you know, well into it, 48 hours, 72 hours, then, you know, really, it's really symptomatic, taking care of yourself, lots of fluids, lots of rest, and, you know, treating your symptoms.
Are we still concerned about the Christmas, all the family gatherings for Christmas, that we're going to start seeing another spike, or are we past that date now? We're already seeing it.
Yeah, if somebody if somebody gets infected, say, over Christmas, how long does it take before symptoms start appearing?
So we usually start seeing it in the first week, so around 4 days. Okay. But you can also be infectious for a day or two before you have symptoms.
Okay.
So say you went to a New Year's Eve party and with a friend, and they were nobody you could tell, but they feel infectious, contagious.
Okay.
Yeah. So we still have time from all those gatherings to see, but it should be in the next week or so that we start seeing that rise.
One more thing before we let you go. How long do I steer clear? If I've had the flu, how long do I need to stay away from work or from other people?
So after your symptoms kind of peak, it takes about 5 to 7 days after that for you not to be infectious.
Okay.
Contagious.
Gotcha.
So once you're like not running fever anymore.
Absolutely. 24 hours.
Gotcha.
All right.
Another thing is, if you get a fever, like say you had fever early on in your course, you're starting to feel better with another fever.
Yes.
Please make sure you get seen, because that could be the sign of a secondary infection. One of the things that flu is famous for is you get knocked down pretty hard, and then you get a bacterial infection on top of it. That's the people that can end up in the hospital. So if you're getting better and then you get knocked down with fever and feeling really bad again, make sure you get seen.
Dr. Martha White, Region 7 Medical Director, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank y'all for having me. It's good to talk to you.
We'll talk to you soon. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCartney.
Beck McCartney on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Oh, sorry. Is this better?
No. 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 No.
Not at all.
Ruben, whistle a tune from one of your band songs. That'll help me. That'll help get it out of my brain.
I'm not even sure I can whistle some of them.
Yeah.
Even the notes are offensive.
Right. Oh. So folks are texting me. They're seeing the Wienermobile around town. Is it already here?
It may already be here.
I saw a picture of somebody on my friend's list spotted it in downtown Shreveport.
Yeah, they're staying at the Remington, apparently.
And, oh, wow.
That's a sweet gig. That's where it's hanging out. Where do you park the Wienermobile when you're sleeping at night? Do you park it on the street?
It was parked on the street, the picture I saw.
Wow. Wow. So a zillion people just come by with a photo op, you know, that they're downtown.
Well, I mean, unless you're incredibly stupid, you're not going to steal the Wienermobile.
Yeah, but you know.
The biggest, most recognizable vehicle escaped by the cover of daylight in the biggest car in the town.
People under the influence of things like to do stupid things. But yeah. I don't think you leave the keys in the Wienermobile. And how do you hotwire a Wienermobile? That sounds like a song. I hotwired the Wienermobile.
Aren't there a few of them that travel around?
Yes, they have a bunch. Yeah,
they have a few that travel around. And it's not a bad gig.
Yeah.
If you can get to be one of the hot doggers.
Is that what they're called? Hot doggers? Okay.
That drive around. Apparently, if you get to stay in places like the Remington.
Yeah, no doubt.
Wow.
No doubt.
That's sweet.
Where is it going to be?
They're going to be at Brookshire's tomorrow in Shreveport on Line Avenue from 9 to noon.
Okay.
Then they're traveling over to Norris Ferry Road. Obviously, Brookshire's brought them in.
Oh,
they're doing an Oscar Mayer promotion. Mm-hmm. They're doing meetups.
Meetups. So Brookshire's is probably having good hot dog deals, I would bet.
I would imagine. Bet. Then tomorrow, Friday, at they're going to be in Longview.
Okay.
That's weird. And then coming back on the 11th in Benton.
The Brookshire's in Benton. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool. It's always fun. And they give you tours. If you go visit, you can climb up on the Wienermobile, sit in the driver's seat, take your pictures. They're real good about that.
So. I think they were here for one of the Mardi Gras parades or something that I was involved in.
Oh, they might have been, yeah.
I think it was a few years ago.
Okay.
And I stuck my head in, and I don't think they were prepared for people to stick your head in.
Ah, okay.
Because it's like... Okay, this has been traveled around in.
Yeah, this is not all cleaned up and spruced up.
Right, yeah.
Oh,
I was
man.
Like, okay.
Back in the day when they used to tour it, I mean, I'm talking about in the 80s, they actually would let people drive it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they would let media people, you know, you could drive it.
Right.
I don't think they do that anymore. But, yeah, it's a cool vehicle. There'll be a lot of photo ops.
That'd be a fun gig to do.
Oh, yeah.
For somebody like these guys. These are kids.
Oh, yeah.
That drive around. Or if you're retired. Mm-hmm. How fun would that be?
Yeah. I think it's the only one like it left. Now, there used to be a lot of mobiles. I don't know if you remember. There used to be a Bic Pen Mobile and a Planner's Peanut Mobile.
The Peanut Mobile.
I don't think those are around anymore.
They're gone.
Yeah. I think the Wienermobile's the only novelty vehicle left.
And I know Brookshire's, when they have a special event, they bring that big grocery cart they have.
Oh, the giant grocery cart.
They bring their giant grocery cart for their promotion.
That they drive.
They drive in the parade.
In the parade.
So I'm sure the grocery cart's going to be in town too, which is always cool.
Yep. So starting, I think they're in town today. So you may see them driving around town.
Okay, that's cool.
And then their first appearance is scheduled for tomorrow at Brookshire's on Line Avenue.
Very cool. They might be doing private events today that they keep quiet. You know,
okay.
I mean, imagine having the Wienermobile at your wedding or your big party. How cool would that be? That'd be awesome.
I don't think you want the word wiener in your invitations.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's kind of a quote from the father of the bride.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think you want the word pit in your invitation. Yeah. Justice Scott Creighton spoke with us about the Shiva Sims Supreme Court hearing, mm-hmm. which was yesterday. And we've got audio from that we're going to delve into next hour. Mm-hmm. But here in about 10 minutes, we'll hear from former Supreme Court Justice Scott Creighton. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710KEEL.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Then it's going to Lubbock. Okay, we got a message on the Shreveport Security Systems message board that said the Peanut Mobile is also in town.
Wow.
Really?
I have not seen the Peanut Mobile since I was a little kid. I thought it was gone.
That's the Planters Nut Mobile.
Wow.
It's going to be at the Thrifty Peanut Bookstore.
Good plan. Amazing.
How funny is that? Today from 11 to 2. And then on the 9th, what's that, Friday,
mm-hmm.
at the Shreveport Aquarium.
Wow. Well,
how fun is that?
Both of them at the same time.
In town.
Unreal.
Huh. Wow.
What are the odds?
No kidding.
Justice Scott Creighton coming up just after the break, talking about the Shiva Sims Supreme Court hearing. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, retired Supreme Court Justice Scott Creighton joining us. Judge, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mike.
Thank you for agreeing to join us this morning.
The state's
I'm a little bit late. I apologize.
That's
for that.
Okay.
But I'm here.
Supreme Court is hearing the case of Shreveport City Court Judge Shiva Sims today. The Judicial Commission recommended a one-year suspension for the judge for several different violations that they found. Explain what happens before the Supreme Court today. Is it the whole court? What will happen in this case?
Well, every case scheduled before the Supreme Court is ruled on by every justice, unless there's a reason for a recusal of one or more justices. So the seven justices will hear oral arguments. And those arguments are based on the question is whether or not the violations that the Judiciary Commission prosecutor claims to have occurred actually, you know, if they're actually proven by clear and convincing evidence, it's a little bit of a higher standard on standard of proof. But they will examine the record and ask questions about the facts and the evidence before the commission, and they will then address whether, assuming that some of those violations have been proven by clear and convincing evidence, whether the penalty of 1 year suspension is appropriate.
Will they hear any of the members of the commission, the Judicial Commission? Will they actually give more testimony? No,
it will simply be the prosecutor on the side of the commission. They have a special prosecutor, several prosecutors within the Judiciary Commission is similar to the DA.
Okay.
And that special prosecutor has assistant special prosecutors, several in number. There'll be one that will give oral arguments. I believe it's a 30-minute per side presentation. And then Shiva Sims and or her lawyer will respond.
Would it be typical for her to do it herself or a lawyer? Or have you seen it both ways? You were on the court for a long time.
I was on the court for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I saw there were occasions where a judge or a lawyer represented himself instead of being represented by counsel. And you know there is an adage about that. Not a good idea in many cases. So she can represent herself. She may certainly do so, but I tend to doubt it. I believe she'll probably speak through her lawyer.
Okay.
Now, what's important here is that the Supreme Court has has the power to, you know, based on the evidence, to either exonerate her based on the record evidence, or affirm the commission findings. The Supreme Court also has the authority to levy any punishment, any level of sanction, whether it be suspension for a year or suspension for less than a year, more than a year, or removal.
So they could go even stricter if they want.
They can. They can. They are not bound by what the Judiciary Commission recommended. And it is a recommendation. You know, it is a process by which the commission of 14 members, it used to be 9, now it's 14, hear the evidence, and they issue a recommendation to the court based on the evidence produced. And so in this case, they found multiple violations, and they recommended a one-year suspension. I believe that there might have been a couple of commission members who would have voted for maybe slightly less, and then maybe one or so that voted for more. But okay. But in the end, the Louisiana Supreme Court justices will decide that issue. And once the Supreme Court, Louisiana Supreme Court, does that, there is a rehearing opportunity after the opinion is rendered, but it does not go any further than the Louisiana Supreme Court.
Talking
for example,
Let me jump in here. Retired Justice Scott Creighton, Supreme Court Justice. Scott, what happens after the hearing today? What's the immediate, will they go into session? Will they make, do you think they'll make a decision today? What happens next?
They will have a private deliberation, the seven justices will, and they will likely discuss the case in some detail, but they probably won't make a definite decision today. There will be, and nothing will be issued today. It'll be a written opinion, probably be issued in about 6 weeks.
Okay.
Wow. Months.
Yeah. But will they do that deliberation today?
Well, they will. The seven justices typically, after oral arguments, after the session's oral arguments. For example, if it's held at 2 o'clock today, they may have 3, 4, 5 cases set. They will hear all those cases, and then they'll deliberate at least preliminarily on each case privately.
Okay.
Privately, and then they will. As they say, take the case under advisement, during which they will read the entire transcript of the hearing, and all of the, you know, they'll reread the written arguments, and they will consider what they heard today. So we will not get a decision in that case.
Take us inside baseball real quick. Do they vote? Do they say, hey, I make a motion to issue a one-year suspension, and then we vote on that? How does that work?
Well, they will discuss the facts of the case. They will discuss the sanction of 1 year. They will talk about whether that's enough or not based on what they understand about the case. But all of this is preliminary discussion, and it will then be docketed within the court, not publicly, but in one of their work sessions to thoroughly examine it and deliberate more.
Okay.
During which they're the justices and their law clerks are studying the transcripts and reading the written briefs again.
Okay.
I mean, it's a very intense study.
Sure.
During my time there, you know, I don't mind telling you and the public and the world, it was about a 60-hour a week job.
Mm.
And a lot of reading. And so they will, I have no doubt that in accordance with their custom and routine and practice, they'll study the case in some detail over the upcoming weeks.
Okay.
And we will get an opinion from the court, I suggest, probably in 6 to 8 weeks.
Wonderful.
Wow.
Retired State Supreme Court Justice Scott Creighton, thanks for jumping on this morning. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Wheels of justice rotate slowly, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, they do. They got to do
McCarty,
it.
Michael McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free...
Bye. Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
some point, we need to talk about this Mudbug Madness vendor scam. Is that?
Yeah.
You mentioned this yesterday, but we didn't get a chance to get into that. What?
Yeah, and I don't have the full details of it, but I know there was some sort of message that went out to folks, possibly on social media, saying if you wanted to be a vendor at the Mudbug Madness, you needed to reply and send in your information because they were taking applicants now. And it was a complete scam. They were trying to get folks information you know, get you to pay to be a vendor. And they weren't even affiliated with Mudbug Madness.
And they, did they know who did it? No details yet.
No, nothing yet. They're working on it. But Mudbug Madness issued a statement and said, you know, this isn't us. We're not accepting vendor applications yet. I'm not looking at it right now. But
sure. Yeah, I threw this at you. Sorry. But
it was quite the, you know, they're going after it directly after a local festival, for crying out loud.
I know. That's crazy.
And I guess somebody that got the request let the Mudbug Madness know, hey, usually y'all don't do this early. Are y'all really taking vendor?
Right.
I guess. And then they went, whoa, send us what you have, and took a look at it and went, this is a complete scam.
Wow.
Unbelievable. So, yeah, beware.
You can't trust anything anymore.
I know. It is absolutely incredible how they're coming for anything and everything you can do. We saw somebody this week, a mutual friend of ours, needing some medical treatment. And it was like, don't put anything out on social media, because you don't want anything like that out there. Because guess what? Yeah. You know the person's in the hospital. You know they're, you know, and it's like all of
and
a sudden.
And now somebody's going to go, hey, Bill needs a GoFundMe.
Yes,
donate
exactly.
For Bill.
And they'll set that up. I was involved in a GoFundMe account for somebody several years ago. GoFundMe was really early, and it was for the family of a man that I knew needed help. And so I got involved, and I told the family how to set it up. And then when it came to push came to shove, somebody, now this was family related, somebody in the family absconded with all the cash. It never went to the person who needed it.
Good gosh.
So even if it is somebody in the family, you never know. You got to be sure whoever is even setting it up does the right
and
thing.
And how do you confirm that?
Right, exactly.
I mean, my gosh.
And I mean, I had to go straight to the person I was trying to help and go, hey, do you have access to the GoFundMe account? Because I think, you know, several thousand dollars has been donated for you. And he goes, no, a family member is the only access to that. And I hadn't seen any of it. I went, wow.
Yeah, I don't trust any emails anymore.
No.
Let me change gears real quick because I'm looking at your hat. Look at your hat.
I know. I love this Ruby.
This is awesome.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to wear, and this is my first one.
Okay.
I think, because I'm realizing it's cold.
Right,
and
yeah.
I have to have a hat on.
It's
all
a little
the time.
Nipply in here this morning.
So
too,
I'm encouraging any businesses you want to send me your hats. We're going to do a little promotion. I'll wear your hat for a day or whatever, and wherever I go, I'll take pictures of me whatever. And today, my very first hat is Opossum.
Opossum, where art thou? Yeah, and you know what? I know a lot of people in bands that have merch. You have a hat, drop it off with me, I'll get it to Aaron.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll be wearing different hats throughout the day.
Reuben's got the black one on.
Yeah. Yes.
Opossum, where art thou?
You got me. Is this free? Do I owe you money now?
Yeah, we'll talk about that off the air.
Okay. That means
free.
I owe him cash.
Hey, nothing free. Come on.
yeah. We've got the Opossum, where art thou hats in red and black. And we're going to have an online store soon. We're getting that set up. So you'll be able to buy Opossum merch online and
I got the shirt with the possum, the dignified possum. Is there a name for this guy?
Mr. Yeah. Trashy.
Mr. Trashy.
You never know. I might be wearing your hat in church. Who knows? I might wear it while I'm drinking, wine drinking. You never know. I'll be out and about wearing different hats.
A human billboard.
Yeah.
Bald heads are cold.
They are. They're really cold. It hit me today when I went to brush my teeth. I'm brushing my teeth. I look in the mirror and I went, I'm bald. I'm completely bald. Oh, and it was cold. It got really cold. Because I actually washed the head again last night and this morning again. And when you put warm water on it, the water hits the head and turns cold immediately.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, ugh.
Well, the hat looks good.
Well, thank you. I love my opossum.
It's
wear
a great hat.
Is that a trucker hat?
Is that a trucker style hat?
Yeah.
It's nice.
Very
I love
nice.
It. I love it. So hats welcome.
We've got some audio from the Supreme Court hearing yesterday, the Shiva Sims Louisiana Supreme Court hearing, and we're going to kind of go through that right after the news top of the hour. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com. FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. Yesterday, local Shreveport Judge Shiva Sims was brought before the Louisiana Supreme Court on ethics charges.
Yes, she
the ethics violations charges.
The Judicial Commission recommended a 1-year suspension for Sims for a series of charges, including using a court-owned vehicle and getting the marshal to put fuel in it when she was using it for her personal use, and mistreating litigants in her courtroom, several other allegations that'll be outlined.
Something about the use of a car?
That's what I just said.
Oh.
And gas and all that. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
You weren't paying attention.
I was. I just dozed off for a moment.
And there are a lot of ethical violations that she's been accused of. And you've heard in our newscast the attorney representing the Judicial Commission. So in the light of being fair, we now have more lengthy audio from the attorney who represented her.
Yeah, this is a clip from that hearing yesterday. One of the justices is asking her attorney,
Carl Helmers.
Helmers. Mm-hmm. What do you think would be a fair sentence for
Mr. Helmers, based on that belief that your client says, I want to take responsibility, what do you believe is the punishment that should be imposed?
And I think if you look through to the Chasson factors, Ms. Beatty went through them in some detail. You know, we have suggested in connection with the briefing that we filed in this case, in light of the history, the prior discipline history, that we would suggest a sanction in the event one was determined to be warranted of up to 60 days for Judge Sims. And part of that is based on the fact that a lot of the issues that have been raised here in connection with her management of courtroom issues, either through evictions or through criminal issues, are determinations that she made in the context of a good faith effort to discharge her judicial duties. And Chasson specifically indicates that that is supposed to be considered in connection with the determination of any type of discipline that would be warranted or meted out by this court. Every violation of a canon of ethics is not a disciplinary offense. It's not something, you know, that you may violate the canons in certain respects, but this court has previously indicated in Fusilier that that's not always going to be something that would warrant discipline. And when you're dealing with individual circumstances, I think you have to look at factually each one of them. And there are specific issues as to why certain things occurred in connection with this. And if you look, for example, at the demeanor claim, which Ms. Beatty spent a lot of time on, and which forms the basis for the commission's idea, well, that there's a pattern here, there's a long-term history of misconduct. On the front end, the commission looks at count 2 and says that's not proven. And count 6, which was a count against this judge for the entire tenure of her history as a judge in Shreveport City Court. They come and they say, well, she's always rude or disrespectful. Even the hearing officer and the commission said, not proven. And we relied upon multiple witnesses in connection with that issue relative to judicial assistants, litigants who appeared before her, clerks who were in her court on a daily basis as to whether she exhibits a demeanor that's improper. And the uniform indication was not only no, but the hearing officer specifically indicated that she is fair, firm with litigants, no question about that, but makes every effort to handle things in a manner that's fair, impartial, and she's willing to engage the facts to address some of those issues. With respect to the Everett claim, which was count 1, that's an eviction proceeding. And just, you know, using some of the numbers over Judge Sims has estimated in her hearing testimony that she has handled between 15 and 20,000 evictions. So the issue before you involves two of them. The first one is this Everett matter. And we would suggest to you that the hearing officer, Judge Gil Jefferson, in connection with the handling and the management of the Everett eviction, Judge Gil Jefferson got it right. She made the determination that the testimony demonstrated by clear and convincing evidence that there was a credibility and a veracity issue with Ms. Everett as a witness. And Judge Sims made an attempt to make a determination whether or not the eviction should be granted under those circumstances. There are issues with respect to, was there an authorized pet? Was there a pet deposit? Was there an unauthorized vehicle on the property? All of those issues, as it became clear that that was going to be a problem and it was going to take longer, she had them sit down. They came back up. The issue was still in play whether or not Ms. Everett was being truthful with her. And this judge has an obligation to go through and make a determination on the merits of the case, who's being honest with me. And she made an effort to do that. She's admitted, well, maybe I could have been more courteous in connection with the handling of that, but my job is to determine who's being honest with me in connection with the litigants before me. And Judge Gil Jefferson fairly indicated that was what she did. The commission relies upon the handling of that matter toward the end when Judge Sims asked the litigants to come back up in order that the tenant could tender the payment for the rent. And Judge Sims asked him to come back up. Ms. Everett turned her back, wouldn't turn around, and then her voice got raised. And Judge Sims fairly is getting concerned about whether she's respecting the judiciary at that point. So the handling of that matter clearly does not demonstrate a violation of the canons of ethics.
What about requiring her to accept the payment for the rent?
I think that under those circumstances, Justice, if you recall, the record indicates that there was a prior arrangement between the tenant and the landlord to meet in order that the tenant could tender the rent. Ms. Everett didn't show up. Because she didn't show up, the tenant went into default. And so there was a legitimate concern about whether or not, if they make an arrangement outside of court in order for this guy to bring the rent, well, is she going to show up then or not? And so, yeah, she said, ask them to tender.
That's a matter of evidence you take into account deciding whether there's a default. But when you order a creditor to accept a payment, that's rather extraordinary, don't you think?
I think the testimony indicates that she directed the tenant to tender the rent.
You don't think the record indicates that creditor was feeling a little bit compelled to accept it?
Well, I think what I read, I don't know
what I wouldn't have been feeling like I was under the judge's thumb and I had to do it.
Well, I think certainly under the circumstances, given the factual scenario in that situation, the landlord had already skipped out on one occasion when the rent was intended to be tendered and there was an agreement beforehand. And right. Judge Sims, at that point, directed the tenant to tender it. In connection with the handling of that, I would suggest to you that, sure, maybe she could have been a little bit more courteous or something along those lines, but I don't suggest, I wouldn't.
My interest is not the courtesy, I mean, as much as just ordering somebody to accept a payment from somebody else. That's not a matter of courtesy or impoliteness. That's a matter, or decorum. That's more a matter of legality. Can a judge act as an inverse collection agent?
I wouldn't. So, and maybe there is some confusion relative to the testimony. Judge Sims' testimony on this issue is that she directed the tenant to tender the payment. And I think a judge certainly has the right to be able to do that under those circumstances, Judge.
Let me ask very quickly. The hearing officer found no violation, and the Judiciary Commission overruled her on that?
Right. The hearing officer that they appointed found no indication by clear and convincing evidence that the commission counsel was able to prove that claim. And that's as to count one, also as to count two, and as to the large portion of count six. She rejected that portion of the demeanor claim. And really, as a practical matter, when you get through all of the demeanor issues that they have focused on and on which they rely today for a lengthy suspension, at the end of the day, you have counts 1, 2, and 6. When you look at the testimony and you look at the determinations, the hearing officer rejected most of 1, 2, and 6. The commission rejected 2 and 6 and then reinstated part of 1. So at the when you get to the end of looking at those three counts, what you have is, at best, some inconsistency and not a determination or not a justifiable determination that those claims are proven by clear and convincing evidence.
And there was also some questions about the usage of a car and mm-hmm. where the keys were kept and
yep.
All of that. We'll get into that right after the break. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, the Supreme Court hearing for the ethics violations charges against Shreveport Judge Shiva Sims was yesterday. And they asked about the use of a car and where the keys were kept and who had use of that car. And that continues now on 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Yeah, let me ask this question. You seem to indicate that there are some political issues involved in the brief, that one judge went to the legislature to change how the chief judge was chosen, that a judicial administrator, I believe, had run for the position and was soundly beaten by Judge Sims. Can you address that?
There does seem to be some political element of the number and frequency of complaints that have been raised as to Judge Sims. And with respect to even count 2, which was the matter involving Stephanie Cesarez, Ms. Cesarez testified in this matter, and she testified that she was told by the clerk of court that she could avoid having to go back before Judge Sims if she would just make a judicial complaint against her. So we do believe that there are, to some degree, if some effort from other individuals up at Shreveport City Court in the administrative side to make complaints that sort of create a little bit of an institutional momentum. Because frankly, if somebody's watching me every single day, I'm going to miss. And if somebody's there to catch my miss every single time, I'm probably going to have a problem. And, you know, I'll readily admit that. But yes, sir?
I just want to say you understand that making a complaint against a judge does not deprive that judge of the ability to rule on a case involving that person.
I absolutely do. Yes, sir. And what's important here is that that was after Ms. Cesarez's appearance before Judge Sims. So she had already ruled on that issue, and the concerns relative to some of the political issues relate not so much to litigants but to other individuals in the courthouse. You pointed out Mr. Miles, who had run against Judge Sims in connection with the second election. And I guess Mr. Miles' involvement kind of gives me an opportunity to move briefly into the use of the court vehicle. The vehicle that was being used at this time stays in the court parking lot, and your question earlier, Judge Weimer, was correct. Judge Sims has testified that she did not use it other than to go back and forth to court. There is no countervailing evidence to suggest otherwise. The vehicle was available.
Right. We went through the filling up of the vehicle the first day and then got refilled. And if you're just going back and forth 2 miles, because at one point in time she indicated she walked, and that proved to be unsatisfactory. She was accosted, so a marshal said, you better drive. And so how do you burn up a tank of gas over 3 weeks in a Honda if you just go back and forth to work, I guess, is the question.
And I don't have an answer for that in terms of the details of how much gas was put in it originally or whether it was filled up or not filled up. I think that that's an issue with respect to the use of that card and when she used the vehicle. There is some dispute as to the period of time that her vehicle was in the shop, either 3 or 4 weeks. And it was certainly Judge Sims' belief throughout the entire period of that time that the only way that she could have discharged her judicial duty and judicial function was to use that vehicle or walk. Marshall Jefferson has testified that he told her specifically, look, with respect to the use of the fuel man card, you can go ahead and fill the vehicle up. You don't need to reimburse us for the gas. He has testified that she offered repeatedly to fill up the vehicle or pay for the gas, and she was advised that that was not necessary, and Marshall Jefferson has confirmed that. And you know, Judge Sims did testify both at the hearing and in kind of and before the hearing officer that she was going back and forth and she was walking initially. And at the hearing before the commission, she clarified, look, I was concerned about my safety relative to those issues. I had been accosted before, and the marshal told me, look, you don't need to be walking. Go ahead and use the vehicle. So those issues with respect to her use of the vehicle are things that she has said, look, under the circumstances, I certainly can see how there may be a public perception that it was either improper or something that maybe I shouldn't have been doing. She had no intent at that point to abuse the judiciary function or abuse her position as a judge in connection with the use of the vehicle. She frankly didn't believe that she had any other option in order to discharge her duties with respect to showing up and managing court on a daily basis. I'd also point out that in connection with the use of the vehicle, it's a vehicle that's available for you for use by all of the judges and the court staff as needed. Other judges have used it to go to conferences. True, there's also testimony that other judges have used it to go back and forth to doctor's appointments and things of that nature. So in terms of your question, Judge Weimer, about the availability of the vehicle, throughout the entire period of time that Judge Sims used the vehicle, it was present and available in the parking lot on a daily basis. Either the keys, the testimony indicates, were kept in her chamber. That key was kept in her chambers in a basket in the judicial assistant's office, in her judicial assistant's office, and would have been available. She has also indicated that there was, in fact, another key for the vehicle that was maintained by Mr. Miles, the judicial assistant. Mr. Miles and no one else raised any issue as to her use of the vehicle, no question about it, or anything along those lines. Had there been any issue raised or some questions,
so she would have addressed that. The opposing counsel suggested that there used to be two keys, but there was only one key.
Well, I think I hate
to boil down the keys, but
I don't think
trying
that
to figure out if, you know, if we're being called upon to decide whether or not this is a violation of the code.
Yeah, and I think the question is availability. You know, and you're not dealing with a huge courthouse. You're dealing with court staff and individual members of the court, all of whom know who has the vehicle and what the circumstances are surrounding that. And there is testimony in the record that confirms that. So had there been any occasion where someone needed the vehicle for any reason, it would have been available during the course of the day at any time. In connection with that, you know, Judge Sims has indicated that she's, you know, she's remorseful and concerned about the fact that citizens and people in the public may have a concern about just the fact that she was using the vehicle.
So that was the discussion on the vehicle. There was a lot more. We couldn't obviously air everything.
Sure. I have reached out to Judge Sims, and we are awaiting a reply. If we get a response, we'll let you know. I don't think she's going to make a public comment until a decision's reached, though. We'll see.
And Scott Creighton told us yesterday, former Supreme Court Justice, that it could be 6 weeks.
Yes. One media outlet here in town said it could be by the end of the month, so I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see.
We'll find out. Mm-hmm. Chris Smith, Bossier City Councilman, joining us in about 10 minutes, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline this morning, Bossier City Councilman Chris Smith joining us. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Well, we're doing very well. We've got some critical issues we want to discuss with you like this morning.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Chris. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you all so much. Thank you.
Don't hang up, because we do have some questions we want to ask you when we get back. Can you hang with us?
Absolutely. I'll be here.
Thank you, Chris. Chris Smith, Bossier City Councilman Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now, breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Bossier City Councilman Chris Smith on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Chris, Bossier Mayor Tommy Chandler has intimated there are exciting things coming to the Louisiana Boardwalk. We just heard yesterday a new restaurant is going to be opening. Is that his big news, or is there more that you might could share with us?
Well, that is just, I think, a one piece of it, right? So a lot of people have been asking for what's going on at the Boardwalk, lots of commentary around there. This restaurant is kind of involved with the Pickler brand that's coming. They're going to have a restaurant in there. And if I understand correctly, this is the first Pickler franchise that's going to have a fully operational restaurant inside of it. So it's kind of a test for them too, to see how this might work nationwide. But there are, I don't want to get ahead of the ownership group or their people on the ground, but they do have a lot of very exciting things. And I think they're going to be having big announcements here rolling out pretty soon. But there is that's owned, privately owned. The city doesn't own the Boardwalk, but we've been heavily involved because we have an interest in seeing it be revitalized and grow. And so they have been working very hard, a lot of people helping, and there's about to be some big things coming.
Well, that's exciting.
When you say big things, give me the Chris Smith vision. What would Chris Smith like to see down there? What would be huge and would work?
Well, you have a large piece of real estate that's already established that you kind of have to work around. So what works in the space? I think we all can agree that retail isn't going to keep it thriving into the future. In our digital age, coming out of COVID, a lot of people shop on Amazon nowadays, or just shop online and get it delivered to you. But in the retail space, something that's working nationwide are micro stores. So you might have a Bloomingdale's micro store that has a few items that you could get, but not the huge department store. So that's something that you're seeing, but more the entertainment side of it. And I really think that's where Boardwalk ownership is leaning heavily into, is entertainment. What can we do to drive people to the Louisiana Boardwalk, the East Bank District, the Riverfront Development Area? How can we get them there? How can we get them to enjoy being there and come back, stay there, spend money? And I think that's where they're really leaning heavily. And that's what I'm excited about, is the family aspect, the entertainment aspect, and giving people things to do. Because that's really the number one complaint we hear, is there's just not a lot to do.
Well, we know that Chasing Aces has opened up down in that area along the river. The Pickler is coming. Those are both huge entertainment venues. What are some entertainment things that have worked in other areas that we might want to look at?
Yeah, so look, I think Chasing Aces is a great time. I took my kids there this past weekend. I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And you're like, well, they wouldn't. They love Chasing Aces. They don't do well. You know, my son, the 2-year-old, will pick the ball up and throw it down the fairway, but he loves it.
I've been known to do that on the golf course too, so.
But, you know, if I had my ideal way, like, as a parent, I'm going to go where my kids want to go. And my kids wake up and say, hey, Dad, I want to go here. Well, I'm going to go there with them, and I'm going to spend money. And so what is it that kids are doing that are making them excited? You know, there's a place over in Dallas. I think it's called Kid City or something like that. You know, it's like a gymnasium type thing. They can jump around, they can play, but they can build things. You know, my kids love when we go out of town, going to places like that. You know, we have a hidden gym. I mean, it's not really hidden. Everybody knows about it, but every time we go there, it's empty. But Southport Discovery Center is an incredible facility. And my kids love going there. We go there all the time. We buy the summer pass in the summertime so they can go as much as they want. But things that kids can just grab onto that can entertain them, parents will come and they will spend money to do that.
Let me shift gears real quick. Bossier residents are getting their water bills this week, and there's a 2% increase on that. Explain why that was needed and what's that going to amount to for most folks?
Sure, it's going to be dollars is the increase. But look, back in a couple years ago, the city of Bossier applied for a DEQ loan through the state of Louisiana to do a water line extension down in South Bossier along Barksdale Boulevard. One of the requirements of that DEQ grant funding was, hey, you got to do a rate study. The state wants to make sure that our water system is operating efficiently. We did a rate study, and as we expected, because of we were just coming out of COVID, we weren't making enough revenue to offset our expenses in our water system. During COVID, chemicals went up, prices went up on everything, and so it took us a while. And we were losing money. So the state came in and said, "Hey, you have two options. You can raise your rates, so you can be self-sufficient, or you can pay back your DEQ loan and basically be ineligible for future grant funding." And so obviously that wasn't what we wanted to do, because as stewards of taxpayer money, if there's options where we can go out and do projects that cost the taxpayers little to nothing, then we want to do that. And so we don't want to be ineligible for future grant funding. So we had to look at it. We passed it. This is what's being lost on folks. We passed this either January of 2025 or December of 2024. We did a larger increase for all of 2025 and then this 2% for 2026, and that gets us to where we need to be. So this was passed 12 months, maybe even 13 months ago, and it's just something that the state said you have to do.
Councilman Chris Smith, Bossier City, real quick, tell me, where are we on term limits in Bossier? Is that a settled deal, or is there still more to come?
Term limits is a settled issue in the city of Bossier. It passed several months ago last year. It is what we have is a 3-term limit. And once you serve 3 terms, you are ineligible to serve again.
And so, the lawsuit's been dropped? The lawsuit that was pending over it, that's not still pending, is it?
Nope. Everything is completely settled in Bossier City. So, you know, for instance, I'm in my 2nd term. I can run 1 more term, but then I can never run for a city council seat in the city of Bossier again.
So you can't sit out 1 term and then come back again for another 3 terms?
You cannot. No, that's what makes our version of term limits a little bit differently.
And it goes for the mayor, too, right?
Goes for the mayor, too.
Okay, great to know. Happy birthday to you, friend.
I appreciate it. Y'all caught me off guard with the singing, but I sure do appreciate it.
And please do me a favor. Encourage all Bossier businesses that you know. I'm doing a little drive for hats to keep my head warm. Any Bossier business that wants me to sport their hat, we're doing a little promotion here, and they can get in on it because I need to cool off this bald head.
Yeah,
warm up this bald head.
Your head. So,
Let us know, Chris. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chris Smith, Bossier City Councilman. Coming up in about 20 minutes, Chief Wayne Smith, Shreveport Police Chief, going to talk 2025 crime stats. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710Keel.com.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We were talking earlier about, and you just mentioned it to Bossier Councilman Chris Smith about your... You're going to start wearing hats.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned it earlier. Ruben ran out to his car and got you a brand spanking new Opossum Where Art Thou hat.
Yep, he did.
Yeah, times is tough. I'm selling merch out of my car.
And now Ruben's got one on. Ruben's is black and white.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he brought you, this is a red and white one.
Yes,
with
absolutely.
The Opossum Where Art Thou, which is Ruben's band.
Both mm-hmm. available from the back of my car.
And I actually, at the commission meeting Monday, I told them, I said, any of your businesses that have hats that want to help keep my bald head warm, get them coming in. So hats are starting to come in from local businesses.
And we brought one in this morning. Somebody yep. brought one in this morning.
Scott dropped off one from SCI, Southern Components, Inc. So
You've already got one going now.
Absolutely. You can look on my Facebook page if you want to get in on the little hat promotion. There's a little phone number you can call, and we can get you connected.
That's so fun.
That is so cool.
That is so
fun. I need hats. It's cold. Yeah. That's the one thing today. I got in the tub, got out of the tub, get ready to brush my teeth. I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm like, I'm bald, and it's cold. I scrubbed the head good, but it's still cold up there, so I got to have a hat on all the time.
Now, also, something, and you've done this before, so you might be aware, you got to watch that sun, too.
Oh, yes.
Because that'll burn. That is lily mm-hmm. white skin that's never seen the sun.
Absolutely. I did pop in yesterday to the Republican gathering at Superior Bar and Grill, and I did have a hat on. I don't think I took it off, but I think a few people were kind of looking like, oh, she really is bald. Yeah, there's no hair back there. It's all neck.
That ponytail's gone.
The ponytail is definitely gone. I popped by and got me. I had already had a brunch to go to, so I couldn't have lunch with them, but I did have a margarita. There's nothing better than day drinking. I'm just saying. Nothing wrong with that.
Well,
but
okay.
I did see a lot of familiar faces, and Danny McCormick spoke. And, I mean, he put his position forward about no tax incentives. And,
right.
you know, he had a lot of questions from the crowd. The mayor was there, and the mayor was, you know, of course, he had a lot of questions because he's been supporting tax incentives for a while. And there were some opponents of it in the crowd of Republicans, but Danny did a good job of getting his point across, so we'll see.
Shreveport Police Chief Wayne Smith going to be joining us coming up after the local news. Top of the hour, we'll talk 2025 crime stats. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Be sure to download that free Keel app. FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty in studio. Shreveport Police Chief Wayne Smith joining us. Chief, good morning.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so happy to be here.
We're glad to have you out here in our East Texas studios.
Absolutely.
You know, I was thinking, we're going to get to crime stats, but I was thinking yesterday, I had to go out to the landfill. And when I was driving out and I just passed the elementary school out there on Woolworth Road.
Walnut Hill.
Thank you very much. And then the sign said, city maintenance ends. And I got to thinking, my gosh, Shreveport Police, fire, it is such a sprawled area. We mentioned this before, but it just hit me yesterday. I thought, You've got to patrol this area. You're responsible for the safety of, say, those kids.
That is correct.
Then you go way out north Shreveport, and then you go further. I mean, it's just, what a daunting task.
Well, territorial-wise, with around 137 or so square miles, our city limits is, it's considerably large, and, you know, a lot of it is in a rural setting.
Yes. So it just hit me yesterday, and I just, again, commendations to you and your officers and department. You guys do a great job.
Our vehicles get a lot of miles on them. Yes.
What do the numbers look like for 2025? You've wrapped it up. You've looked at all the data. It looks like, for most categories, pretty good news.
It is. Hadn't released the exact numbers yet. There still could be a couple coming in. But it looks like for 2025, things are headed in the right direction. In most major categories, things are down considerably, very noticeably. And one of the things that stood out to me that I'm so happy with, we encourage our community to call us immediately and let us, you know, attempt to mitigate a situation or circumstance before it comes violent. And I see that our actual calls for service are up.
Mm-hmm.
So
I saw a report. I'm not sure on which TV station. I would give them credit if I knew. But it from the LSUS data with regard to your calls, a ton of your calls have to do with mental health or other issues. They're not really even crime calls. That's a struggle, I guess, because you got to respond.
That is correct. And over the course of the last few years, all of our offices have received some specific training in how to recognize and deal with someone who is going through some mental trauma. And I see that the actual calls for service related to mental health calls are up considerably.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
One of the concerns that we were looking at some of the numbers are domestic violence calls. Those numbers are still very concerning.
Very much concerning. Probably 30% or so of our homicides involve domestic violence incidents. So they are up. Domestic calls are up.
Absolutely. I'm surprised it's that low, quite frankly.
Yes, sir. I am too.
When we say domestic violence, we think, you know, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend. But that could be mother, child, grandmother. I mean, it's anything in that familial household, correct?
That is correct. If it's a domesticated kind of relationship between the victim and the suspect, it would be classified as domestic.
What are you doing to try to bring that number down? Are there some new efforts, some new trends that are working in other communities?
Absolutely. One of our first major attempts to do that is at our new North Market substation that's going to open. We are partnering with the Family Justice Center, and we will actually have an office inside of that substation where people can come and get assistance with getting restraining orders, getting a peace bond, getting assistance if they are the victim of a domestic violence, however that is.
The other thing regarding the violent crimes down, homicides down, what do you attribute that to, Chief?
Well, I don't contribute it to any one particular effort. It is the effort of everyone across our community, however big or small, what you've done to assist in that effort. But we have implemented some great strategies that appears to be having an effect. But overall, it's what everyone is doing to help.
Now, we are seeing, I know I see the beloved camera on I-20 every morning with the blue light flashing. Thank you for that.
The trailer.
Absolutely.
Makes me slow down.
Right outside Independence Stadium.
You've got those all around town and even private businesses now. I know some of the Circle K's, the Kroger stores, they've put them in their parking lots. Are the ones that businesses have, are they linked to your real-time crime center for the most part?
Usually the ones that businesses has are rentals. And some of the leasing companies that own them do link those to the real-time crime center. At this current point, we are over 2,200 camera feeds that are coming wow. into the real-time crime center.
Does that include people's Ring cameras and
absolutely.
That type of stuff?
Okay. Absolutely. And the council authorized me a while back to purchase a couple of more camera trailers because they are working out remarkable. And so that is in the process as we speak.
Let me ask you about the Ring cameras again, because people were suspicious when y'all first rolled this out. Oh, you're going to be able to use, you know, anything you want. Pitch that again. Why that's real important if folks have Ring cameras or their home cameras. You're not spying on their homes. You're only using that for when?
We're only using that is when something occurs in your neighborhood so we can get good leads mm-hmm. to begin an investigation to bring the matter to justice. We're not there spying on individual homes at all. Mm-hmm. And without a doubt, before we use that data, you'll be talked to. You'll be consulted.
Okay.
Can you hang with us through the break?
Absolutely.
We're going to talk with Chief Wayne Smith, Shreveport Police Department. Take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport Police Chief Wayne Smith in studio, Mike and McCarty. Chief, in addition to the cameras and the real-time crime center, What other methods of technology are you implementing or maybe looking at or anything you can share with us? I know you don't want to give away all trade secrets, but...
Well, there's some great technology that exists out there. Going to chief conferences around the United States, you have the option of previews of what the future holds. The drone program, we may possibly expand that. There are robotic drones that stay perched now on top of buildings, on top of fire stations. And immediately when a call goes out, that drone takes flight and it is sending back video. It can get there within anywhere within 30 seconds or so, whereas a car, it may
take...
Does
it have to be piloted?
No.
Wow.
Nope. It's totally automated. So we're looking at maybe possibly that for the future. And
that's really cool.
The substations and the new headquarters, we unveiled kind of the new headquarters drawings and et cetera. Give us the timetable on, I guess, the next substation to open will be North Market.
That is correct. We expect to be making some progress in that direction probably within the next month.
Okay.
Maybe this month.
And then the other, the 70th and St. Vincent?
70th and St. Vincent construction is well underway. The safe room has been done inside. The parking lot has been done. The concrete has been poured. So they're making great progress. And I do expect here sometime in 26 for that station to open.
Will there be a fourth? I know we have the one on Monkhouse already open. Will there be a fourth substation?
We are currently at a fourth location on Kingston Road, close to Bert Coombs, and I would expect sometime in the future we could head in that direction to actually build a fourth one. But right now we do have a fourth location.
That lease amount everybody was concerned about, what are we paying for that?
I don't know. We pay standard commercial lease for facilities, no more than if you would lease something anywhere else, standard commercial lease.
And what about the main headquarters building? What's the status of that? We got the drawings. It looks like things are starting.
It is. I would expect things there to move pretty swiftly. Probably latter 2027, that building should be near completion.
Wow, that's exciting. Cool. Let's change gears for just a moment. Let's talk a little Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras.
I can't believe it's already Mardi. We already had king cake this morning.
We did.
Wow. And I'm sure there's a piece if you're interested.
Always.
Yeah, exactly. Plans are already, obviously, I'm sure you guys have had meetings, plans in place. Are we working again with additional agencies, and how are we looking staff-wise?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, we just talked about that very thing Monday in my staff meeting, and my staff constantly works on it. It never ends. We know the parades that are going to take place and where they're going to take place. We've notified our offices of the draft. We have contacted other agencies to assist us. So plans are well underway.
And you guys will have folks, you'll be using drones. The big, what's that big camera tower? What do y'all call that?
Skywatch.
Okay, and that'll
be out? Skywatch trailers. Yeah.
Absolutely.
As you sit here this morning, having 40-plus years experience with the department.
Almost 46 headed that way.
Good night.
My gosh.
You only look like 58. But I'm curious, what is your biggest concern as the leader of keeping people safe, hundreds of thousands of people safe? What's your biggest concern as we head toward Mardi Gras and these monster parades?
Being able to maintain the level of service that our community has gone accustomed to, irregardless of the parade. You know, the parades are an extra burden on the resources that we have, but we're still going to maintain the same level of committed service to those that don't attend the parades.
Is the biggest problem, I'm going to say it, and maybe people may get, is it people that overindulge? Is that probably your biggest problem, if you had to pinpoint it?
That definitely does add to it. Mm-hmm. Probably would be on the top tier.
Okay. Especially juveniles.
Absolutely.
That decide they're going to go out there and have a little fun, and they drink their ices that they've mixed other stuff in.
Absolutely. But contrary...
Wait, you mix stuff in an icy?
No, I've never done that.
What?
No, not me.
But you know, due to our...
Or a Sonic drink? What?
You know, due to our emerging technology that it's just awesome, we are able to really focus in on things like that without actually having to have a body boots on the ground.
Wait, what now?
Technology is really an amazing thing. We're able to focus in on underage drinking without actually having to have boots on the ground right there looking at you.
Okay, I'm gonna obviously have to ask off mic.
Come on, have a good time, everybody.
Are you putting GPS things on vodka bottles now?
Could very well be.
let's talk about that, because the mayor made a good point a few weeks ago when he said, you know, yes, manpower is down, but because of technology, do we need as many as we used to need? That's a pretty valid point.
Sure. With more, you can do more.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on where you want to be and the direction that you want to go. With more, you can do more, without a doubt. And that's on both sides of the spectrum.
That's how companies feel, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Corporate.
How are we doing on getting the cars replaced? I know you have to get your orders in. I think you had to get them in by October. Are they starting to come in? Are things starting to move?
Not at this point. You know, our new budget obviously has rolled around, and we're ready to get started with our purchases for 2026. So as soon as I get notice from my administration that you are ready to go, we can call the manufacturer and says, put us in line.
Mm-hmm.
Send us some automobiles.
Where is your administrative team working out of? We know everybody's out of 1234 Texas. Where's Chief Smith's office and your team?
On South Point Parkway.
Okay.
Everyone is there.
Now, where is that? South
by
Point.
The IRS office?
I don't know where that is, thank
by
goodness.
By the Social Security.
I don't
right
know
off
where
of
that
Ninth
is.
Street.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that one. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know where that is.
Goes behind Walmart.
Behind the Walmart,
one
yeah.
Street. Matter of fact, the Social Security Administration, IRS office, a daycare, and the next complex is SPD. It's a big sign out front.
So
you can't miss
where's
it.
The undercover division stationed right now?
I'm not sure. They're floating around somewhere
yeah,
or another.
Okay.
Chief, you're looking forward to it. You had good numbers down in 2025. Are you predicting that trend is going to continue for this new year?
We're going to keep pushing in that direction. We got some new strategies, some new operations that we're going to begin here within the next couple of weeks that I'm quite confident is going to keep things headed in a positive direction.
Did
and
you hear
you say,
GPS on tequila bottles? Did you hear
I
him
know,
say that?
That's interesting. That is very interesting. By the end of next year, you're hoping to be back, everybody back, except for the permanent substations, back at 123 Texas.
That is correct.
We're
looking
good.
Forward to that.
That's mm-hmm. exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we are.
That's
the
exciting.
The new design is just amazing.
It really is.
Great job that the architect and everyone did.
Very good. Chief, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Thanks
Happy
for coming
New
in.
Year to you.
I think there's king cake down the hall. You need to grab you some.
Y'all come see us.
All right.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, I meant to ask Chief Smith after we got off the air, what in the world is he talking about being able to determine underage drinking without somebody around?
No kidding.
What kind of technology do they have?
Really? That's like
Ruben,
George
you better watch
Orwell
out, buddy.
Stuff. Yeah.
I am more than of age.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, okay.
That's pretty incredible. And the numbers, if you looked at, I mean, look at his report, the numbers do look really good. We've made some significant improvements, and it's good to hear, and I hope we continue that. I hope that trend continues. New Orleans just unveiled. They have pretty good trends there. I think a lot of cities are doing the same. You know, it's really been a good trend for crime numbers going mm-hmm. down. So that's good to see, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and be sure to download the free Keel app.
Best. Stories of the Day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Yesterday, the Louisiana Supreme Court heard the, would you say charges against local judge Sheva Sims?
Allegations, charges.
Allegations, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, of misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's kind of set that up a little bit.
Yes, the Judicial Commission, which is a part of the state Supreme Court, and they investigate judges that may have, and attorneys who may have done things wrong, and that Judicial Commission recommended a one-year suspension for Judge Sims, who's a city court judge in Shreveport. And that recommendation then goes before the state Supreme Court, and they determine, should we keep this one-year suspension? Should we lessen it? Should we make it more? Should
more
we suspend
severe?
Her completely,
sure.
Remove her from the bench? They have a lot of different options, and they heard the case yesterday.
And this is a little clip about one of the points of contention was the use of a city car, and apparently there were keys that she kind of allegedly harbored,
commandeered.
Mm-hmm. Nobody mm-hmm. else could have use of that car, and that was brought up. The justices asked her lawyer.
Yeah, let me ask this question. You seem to indicate that there are some political issues involved in the brief. That one judge went to the legislature to change how the chief judge was chosen, that a judicial administrator, I believe, had run for the position and was soundly beaten by Judge Sims. Can you address that?
There does seem to be some political element of the number and frequency of complaints that have been raised as to Judge Sims. With respect to even count two, which was the matter involving Stephanie Cesarez, Ms. Cesarez testified in this matter, and she testified that she was told by the clerk of court that she could avoid having to go back before Judge Sims if she would just make a judicial complaint against her. So we do believe that there are, to some degree, if some effort from other individuals up at Shreveport City Court in the administrative side to make complaints that sort of create a little bit of an institutional momentum. Because frankly, if somebody's watching me every single day, I'm going to miss. And if somebody's there to catch my miss every single time, I'm probably going to have a problem. And, you know, I'll readily admit that. But yes, sir.
I just want to say you understand that making a complaint against a judge does not deprive that judge of the ability to rule on a case involving that person.
I absolutely do. Yes, sir. And what's important here is that was after Ms. Cesarez's appearance before Judge Sims. So she had already ruled on that issue, and the concerns relative to some of the political issues relate not so much to litigants, but to other individuals in the courthouse. You pointed out Mr. Miles, who had run against Judge Sims in connection with the second election. And I guess Mr. Miles's involvement kind of gives me an opportunity to move briefly into the use of the court vehicle. The vehicle that was being used at this time stays in the court parking lot. And your question earlier, Judge Weimer, was correct. Judge Sims has testified that she did not use it other than to go back and forth to court. There is no countervailing evidence to suggest otherwise. The vehicle was available.
Right. We went through the filling up of the vehicle the first day, and then got refilled, and if you're just going back and forth 2 miles, because at one point in time she indicated she walked, and that proved to be unsatisfactory. She was accosted, so a marshal said you better drive. And so how do you burn up a tank of gas over 3 weeks in a Honda if you just go back and forth to work, I guess, is the question.
And I don't have an answer for that in terms of the details of how much gas was put in it originally or whether it was filled up or not filled up. I think that that's an issue with respect to the use of that card and when she used the vehicle. There is some dispute as to the period of time that her vehicle was in the shop, either 3 or 4 weeks. And it was certainly Judge Sims' belief throughout the entire period of that time that the only way that she could have discharged her judicial duty and judicial function was to use that vehicle or walk. Marshall Jefferson has testified that he told her specifically, look, with respect to the use of the fuel man card, you can go ahead and fill the vehicle up. You don't need to reimburse us for the gas. He has testified that she offered repeatedly to fill up the vehicle or pay for the gas, and she was advised that that was not necessary, and Marshall Jefferson has confirmed that. And you know, Judge Sims did testify both at the hearing and in kind of and before the hearing officer that she was going back and forth and she was walking initially. And at the hearing before the commission, she clarified, look, I was concerned about my safety relative to those issues. I had been accosted before, and the marshal told me, look, you don't need to be walking. Go ahead and use the vehicle. So those issues with respect to her use of the vehicle are things that she has said, look, under the circumstances, I certainly can see how there may be a public perception that it was either improper or something that maybe I shouldn't have been doing. She had no intent at that point to abuse the judiciary function or abuse her position as a judge in connection with the use of the vehicle. She frankly didn't believe that she had any other option in order to discharge her duties with respect to showing up and managing court on a daily basis. I'd also point out that in connection with the use of the vehicle, it's a vehicle that's available for you for use by all of the judges and the court staff as needed. Other judges have used it to go to conferences. True, there's also testimony that other judges have used it to go back and forth to doctor's appointments and things of that nature. So in terms of your question, Judge Weimer, about the availability of the vehicle, throughout the entire period of time that Judge Sims used the vehicle, it was present and available in the parking lot on a daily basis. Either the keys, the testimony indicates, were kept in her chamber. That key was kept in her chambers in a basket in the judicial assistant's office, in her judicial assistant's office, and would have been available. She has also indicated that there was, in fact, another key for the vehicle that was maintained by Mr. Miles, the judicial assistant. Mr. Miles and no one else raised any issue as to her use of the vehicle, no question about it, or anything along those lines. Had there been any issue raised or some questions,
so opposing counsel suggested that there used to be two keys, but there was only one key.
Well, I think I hate this
to boil down the keys, but
I don't think
trying to figure out if you know if we're being called upon to decide whether or not this is a violation of the code.
Yeah, and I think the question is availability. You know, and you're not dealing with a huge courthouse. You're dealing with court staff and individual members of the court, all of whom know who has the vehicle and what the circumstances are surrounding that. And there is testimony in the record that confirms that. So had there been any occasion where someone needed the vehicle for any reason, it would have been available during the course of the day at any time. In connection with that, you know, Judge Sims has indicated that she's, you know, she's remorseful and concerned about the fact that citizens and people in the public may have a concern about just the fact that she was using the vehicle.
Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We were talking this morning, the Wienermobile, Oscar Mayer Wienermobile is in town. Mm-hmm. In fact, you got a text early this morning, spotted the Wienermobile.
Yep, the mayor texted me and said, yeah, the Wienermobile is definitely downtown, right next to the Remington Hotel. Apparently, that's where the hot doggers are staying, is at the Remington.
Parked in front of Stray Cats there. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
The mayor spotted it downtown today.
So not a bad gig if you're staying at the Remington.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow.
Nice digs. And where can we see the Wienermobile? It's going to be making several public appearances, right?
Now, this is pretty amazing because not only is the Wienermobile here, the Planters Nutmobile is in town also.
Wow. Wow.
That's crazy.
Both of them at the same time.
Wieners, okay. The Wienermobile and the Planters Nutmobile.
Be right. Careful, Mikey.
All right.
Brookshire's
settle down.
Meetup today. No, tomorrow. Brookshire's Meetup. M-E-A-T. Get
okay.
It? Meetup.
Cool.
At 9 a.m. on Line Avenue. Then they'll be at Norris Ferry Road at 1 p.m.
Okay.
Tomorrow. Then they're going to Longview.
All right.
On Friday. And then they're coming back tomorrow, or January 11th on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be at the Brookshire's in Benton.
Okay.
Now, and you can see all of that on KielNews.com.
And the Peanut Mobile, where's
yes,
he going to be?
The Nut Mobile is going to be at the Thrifty Peanut Bookstore.
Cool.
Amazing.
Isn't that clever?
That's pretty good.
11 a.m. this morning. And then at the Shreveport Aquarium tomorrow at noon.
Very cool. That's awesome.
Then they're heading over to Lubbock, Texas.
Okay. Details are on the website, right?
Yes. Check out KielNews.com if you want to find out that schedule.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Check out. It's not something you see every day.
I can't believe the Nutmobile is still around. I have not seen the Nutmobile. It was... The last time I saw it, I was a child, and it was at Harvest Foods in Minden, which is now Brookshire's.
Wow. You're going to need to go buy Thrifty Peanut.
I guess I
got to
go buy Thrifty Peanut.
Thrifty Peanut. They're on Uri Drive.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be there at 11 o'clock this morning.
Lots of great photo ops with these mobile promotional cars. Are they cars?
You see every day.
No, you're right about that. No doubt.
101.7 FM, 710 KIO, Mike and McCarty.